Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
You can call it what you like. I call it love.
Have you ever stopped and wondered why it is that pro-lifers put so much emphasis on life in the womb? We are pro-life in the broadest sense, of course. We talk about here on Issues, etc., defending life from beginning to end. The beginning is kind of important, though, isn't it? Without a beginning, you can't have an end or a middle. Maybe that has something to do with the pro-life emphasis on life in the womb. We're going to be talking about a pro-life view of life on this Monday afternoon, February the 6th, joining us to do so, Matthew Lee Anderson. He's founder of Mere Orthodoxy, a doctoral candidate in Christian ethics at Oxford University. And he's author of a recent column for Vox titled, People Criticize Pro-Lifers for Focusing So Much on Abortion, But There's a Reason We Do. Matthew, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
As you voice in the title of that article, the criticism is often that so much emphasis is put on the life in the womb that pro-lifers perhaps ignore other aspects of life. Laying aside the second part of that, is it true that pro-lifers emphasize life in the womb? If so, why?
Yeah, I actually think it is true. I think that as a movement, we do prioritize what happens to the embryo and the fetus and the protection and the preservation of the embryo and the fetus. There are historical reasons for that. I mean, Roe versus Wade introduced a rupture into the pro-life movement. It created a lot of anxiety around that, understandably, and a lot of energy over around repealing it. But I actually think the reasons go much deeper than just that historical cause. I think there's a sense in which the embryo and the fetus is a kind of microcosm. It encapsulates, it distills this drama of existence that we are all wrapped up in, and it really distills the kind of dependency that we all have upon one another as we are adults, as we are grown and walking around. It clarifies for us something really valuable about the nature of what it means to be human. You and I, we began as embryos in the womb. We didn't have the first-person perspective. We didn't have consciousness. We didn't have all these things that we now currently have that allow us to have this conversation. And in that sense, our life within the womb is a kind of presupposition for our existence here and now. And I think as we look at that, we say there's something really wonderful, really kind of magical and mysterious about that presupposition that's worth preserving and that has a particular moral significance. It's uniquely determinative of how we view life outside of the womb and what sort of rights and capabilities we're gonna defend for each other, even as mature adults.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Matthew, is that what pro-lifers believe that is intrinsic to life in the womb, the characteristics of life in the womb that you described there briefly, we can get into a little bit more, are really actually our concerns about all of human life writ large.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a focused disclosure, is how I put it in sort of academic terms. It's a concentrated form of how we view life writ large, how we view all of our social relations, all of the lives of the people that we care about. And so it's not exclusive of concerns about, refugees or poverty or, all the other issues that afflict human life and that induce suffering. You know, all of that in one sense falls under a pro-life label or a pro-life outlook. But what happens in the womb is a really concentrated, crystallized form of all of those other moral issues that if you get it wrong, it really impinges and calls into question everything else that you do, I think.
You're also pointing out the consistency, in the best of all possible worlds, the consistency of the pro-life view, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you hear a lot of people will talk about a consistent ethic of life. And I'm for it. I think that's great. And what they mean by that is pro-lifers care not just about abortion, but about all of these other things, about poverty, about war, and so on and so forth. And I think all of that's right, but a consistent outlook still allows for certain emphases, right? I can view certain moments within human life as more central, more important than other moments. And like, I just think as humans, we're prone to think that beginnings and endings are disproportionately significant for the meaning of our whole lives and how we treat life in the womb and how we treat life at the very end. I think are just, they really matter more in some pretty important ways. So it doesn't mean that nothing that happens in the middle matters. It all matters. We can be consistent, but we can be emphatic in our concern about life in certain areas.
Talk a bit about, you have written about wonder and awe when it comes to the pro-life position. How would you describe where those fit?
Yeah, I mean, I got accused, I think, in some of the responses to that article of having a sort of warmed over pagan mysticism, which was funny. You know, when I think about what animates pro-lifers, what prompts them to march in Washington, D.C., and to stand outside of abortion clinics praying for the women who are doing there, what animates all of this energy, I think at the very heart of it, is this sense that the embryo is a kind of explosion of newness. It's an explosion of possibilities and opportunities and potential goods that creates a kind of awe towards it, a kind of reverence. Embryos are extraordinary. The emergence of life, the degree of complexity that goes into making a new human being is just an awe-inducing complex of realities. And I think that sense of awe, that sense of wonder, that sense of, even though it's very, very small, it may go on to do extraordinary things, is really the heart of the pro-life atmosphere. And in some ways, it's not just if it goes on to do extraordinary things. It could just go on to have an ordinary, normal life, and we still view that as worth it because I think we recognize that there is something really remarkable about the human being and including its situation inside of the womb of another.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that last part because, you know, often there are arguments made, and they have their place, that, you know, we could be aborting the next Einstein or the next Jefferson or something like that, people who have made huge contributions to the well-being of the rest of humanity. And I'm glad to hear you say that even if we're not aborting the next Einstein, if we're aborting the next guy who drives a bus the rest of his life, we are still extinguishing something that is intrinsically valuable and equally valuable, whether it's a bus driver or Einstein.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, C.S. Lewis's terrific line at the end of The Weight of Glory, his famous sermon, "You have never seen a mere mortal." I think it sums that up really well, right? The bus driver, the school teacher, they're not mere mortals. There is something really wonderful about being a human being in all of its manifestations. And, you know, whether or not we abort the next Einstein or abort the next bus driver, we've still lost out on some distinctive good, some precious contribution to the world.
Matthew Lee Anderson is our guest. He's founder of Mere Orthodoxy, a doctoral candidate in Christian ethics at Oxford University, and author of a recent column for Vox titled "People Criticize Pro-Lifers for Focusing So Much on Abortion, But There's a Reason That We Do." When we come back, we're going to talk about both the responsibility of women for their children and the magnitude of their sacrifice. Folks, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and in the culture at large. You can find out about their great work and their new Eyes for Life campaign, where LCMS members tell their stories about how all life from conception to natural death is sacred, valued, and a gift from God. LCMS.org/life. I'm Todd Wilkin. More issues, etc. after the break.
Defending Life from Beginning to End. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a pro-life view of life with Matthew Lee Anderson. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk with Phelim McAleer, a filmmaker and investigative journalist who has co-authored the new book, Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer. Kermit Gosnell, an abortionist in Philadelphia who was eventually convicted of murder and infanticide. We'll tell that story. It's pretty grueling, but we're going to tell that story here in about 10 minutes on Issues, Etc. Matthew, when you talk about the unborn and the life perspective that focuses on the unborn, the focus is also, therefore, upon the woman who carries that child, the mother of that child. In particular, you say, the responsibility the woman has for her children, and as you call it, the magnitude of her sacrifice. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, we just have to acknowledge women have a disproportionate burden in the process of creating human life. There are certain ways in which a woman will relate to new human life that I am just never going to be able to participate in or understand. A mother, quite literally, sacrifices her body, in a limited sense, for sure, but in a very real sense, so that an embryo can gestate over 9 months and be prepared to come into the world. And that sort of bodily sacrifice, I think, gives mothers a really unique role within the family, a very, very important role within the structure of the family. You know, I quote someone in the essay, Rosalind Hursthaus, who describes it as mothers having the authority to give the child to the father. And I think that there's some sort of poetic significance in that. You know, women, they give the child to the husband. They allow the child to gestate, and the child comes out of the woman's womb and is presented to the father. And I think that's there's a lot in that that establishes women as having a very sort of distinctive authority over children and over, over that process.
So it really is no surprise, I would think, that the aims of feminism, which is often fueled by a support for abortion on demand, would denigrate both the sacrifice and the authority that women have in motherhood.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there's been all sorts of conversation lately about whether or not one can be a pro-life feminist. Some pro-life organizations were removed from sponsorship of the March for Women, or the Women's March, excuse me. And, you know, I think that sort of tension, that sort of hostility, I understand why secular pro-choice feminists have that point of view, because to be a woman is to be something more than just a bearer of children. But it's also to be at least that, right, in the sense that whether or not a woman has a child, those bodily rhythms, those biological features are a distinctive part of her life and the presentation of herself to the world. And we can't just sort of remove that orientation towards procreation and for a woman to still be a woman. So I think, you know, obscuring procreation and trying to bracket it from being a woman in the way that paradoxically, some of the secular feminist movements try to do, I think is almost incoherent. I just don't think it can survive.
Is this understanding the womb as a microcosm for not just life, but for society, is it a better foundation for equality, for egalitarianism, than feminist philosophy?
I hope so. I mean, because I am, you know, at the same time trying to say, look, women have a distinctive authority and role, right? They have, you know, I'm emphasizing in this process, they play a real role that a man will never play. And I think it does establish them as at least equal partners. And it creates a kind of natural reverence, I think, between the sexes, right? Sort of awe and wonder that we would have towards the embryo, we also have towards those women who bear the embryo. And women have, I think, a similar awe and reverence for men, for their, not so much their role in procreation, but for other features of men that make us distinctly valuable. So yeah, my hope is, I mean, what we lose when we talk about equality is the asymmetry, differences between males and females. And we have conceptions of equality that can't handle difference. And I think that's a real problem.
You write, part of the mystery and enchantment of life is that we know so little of the person who is the embryo and what and who they will become. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, if you think about a mother and a father, when they find out that they're pregnant, all they know, if they're a married couple and they've been chased, let's say, all they know about the embryo is that the embryo is the union of their love. Beyond that, it's kind of a blank slate. Now, we could do genetic testing these days so we can find out more within the womb, but even that isn't going to provide very much definitive information about who the embryo is going to become. And so there's a sense in which I think the love of the mother and father precedes the knowledge that they will have of that person, and it precedes what the person will become, and allows the person and motivates the person, provides a context for the embryo to grow into the person that they'll become. And so I think that sense of love allows for a sense of surprise. You know, there's a sort of learning that parents go through. They meet their child, and their child is not like they expected in certain ways, reminds them of Uncle Joe in certain ways, and there's a sort of negotiation where they come to learn about their child and discover their child. And I think that's really a wonderful part of the process of having children. It's one of the reasons why people do it. But I also think it supplies some reason to see what happens in the womb is distinct. It's really a clarifying moment where love precedes knowledge of a person and goes beyond the knowledge of the person in a real way.
Finally, talk about what you call the margins of life for the pro-lifer. What do you mean by those things?
I mean, I really have in mind there the beginning and ends of life. These points where life is sort of hanging by a thread, where it's excessively vulnerable, where we don't necessarily have agency to resist attack. There's nothing the embryo can do if someone were to attack it and take its life. It has no agency to speak of. And similarly, you know, a person at the end of their life who's in a persistent vegetative state, who might be euthanized, you know, has no agency. They have no ability to determine the course of their life. And I think in both cases, you know, our ethics has to be able to say not just that there are lives here that are worth dignity, but that there's something about being a human being, even in these states, that reveals something good about humanity, that our lives are not just our autonomous agency, but that there is a sense of dependency that we have that's core to being human that's worth preserving.
Matthew Lee Anderson is founder of Mere Orthodoxy. He's a doctoral candidate in Christian ethics at Oxford University and author of a recent column for Vox titled "People Criticizing Pro-Lifers for Focusing So Much on Abortion, But There's a Reason We Do." You can read it and find a link to Mere Orthodoxy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Matthew, thanks.
Thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Phelan McAleer is going to join us on the other side of the break. He's co-authored the new book, Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer. We will tell the story of the Philadelphia abortionist who is convicted of murder of both women and children. Some of the descriptions you're going to hear in the next half hour you will find disturbing, so take caution.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific. At issuesetc.org.